Ladies and gents, welcome back to another Engineers podcast. Today, I'm joined by Azeem Ansar, who's CTO of Attune. Attune are on quite an interesting mission to make shipping insurance products as seamless as possible and mainly focusing on the startup world. Azeem's going to run us through what that process actually looks like and some of the really interesting engineering challenges that sit behind that. Azeem's background is really interesting. He's done some cool stuff at Meta. He's done some cool stuff at Venmo, based over in New York himself. And he's going to introduce himself way better than I am. Azeem, thanks for coming to join us. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. I'm really excited to talk through what we're up to.
Good man. Good man. Do you want to give credit to your background and a little bit about you and your career? It's impressive.
Yeah, totally. No, I'm happy to talk through what I've been up to. You mentioned today I'm the CTO of Attune, manage our engineering team as well as product, and that amounts to a couple dozen folks or so on our side. I'll start from the top. I've always been pretty technically minded in some form or fashion. I started programming when I was really young. I think I was trying to think about this earlier today. I think my first program that I ever coded ever was a choose your own adventure story based on Star Trek. I just recently watched this Borg episode or some series of Borg episodes on Star Trek. This probably dates me. So I decided to whip up a little game in BASIC, very simple, barely did anything. But that was sort of like when I first started getting more into software engineering and programming, just thinking that way. And I've always been drawn to very quantitative and technical things, studied math and physics and computer science at Penn, worked in a number of different roles. You mentioned a few of them, always like sort of putting on not only my software engineering hat, but also my product hat. I tend to think of myself as a very product focused and product minded engineering leader. And I think that's really come through here at Attune, as well as a variety of things that I've done. So I like thinking about the product experience, about what customers will face, about the business. And so have worked in that capacity at Venmo, at Facebook, and now at Attune. And you kind of rightfully captured it. Our mission at Attune is really to make insurance as easy as it should be for small businesses. And so we are trying to speed up the access that folks have to insurance that they need, particularly when you're running a coffee shop or a medical office or a law office or whatever small business you're running. The last thing you want to worry about is risk and what ends up happening when something goes wrong. Ideally, you want to be protected and covered when something goes wrong. So that's us in a nutshell. There are a variety of different things that I can get into, but maybe I'll pause there. And that's me.
No, I can't wait. You touch on something really interesting that I'm speaking to so many people about at the moment. I find a lot of people in the product space have software engineering backgrounds. The product world seems to have modernized is really the wrong word, but I think that a lot of people are transitioning from software engineering into product roles. The modern way of, I think, product-based businesses are software engineers need to have that product, customer, commercial understanding to build something that their customers want. So I see the move more and more now, I think is really what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I'm happy to react to it as well, if you'd like.
Go for it.
I think there are a few reasons for that. One, companies are getting more efficient and companies are also getting smaller in many ways. And so when you are getting more efficient and smaller, it behooves everyone to wear more hats versus just the hat that they're, you know, kind of hired to wear. And so we used to have a value at Attune actually called swerving responsibly. And the whole ethos behind that was you're not just here to do your job. You're here to put on as many hats as you can wear, I suppose, and delve into wherever you can have impact. And I think that's just becoming so true as time progresses for all sorts of companies, big and small, big today or small companies that are staying smaller because they can be so efficient. I think that's one. And two, for me, it's been really helpful to have both the technical perspective as well as the customer perspective and kind of be able to whipsaw almost back and forth between those perspectives over the course of my career and my journey. I think it's really important to know who you're building for. That's certainly a lot of what we think about when we hire. We tend to think a lot about bringing engineers on board who do think about the product first, who do think about the user first and the customer first. Whoever that customer may be, if it's a product engineer, the customer might be our broker or insured. If it's someone on our infrastructure team, the customer might be our other engineers. But keeping the customer front and center is really important for us. 100%. I think that's not just true for us, but true for many companies, increasingly more so as
time progresses. Yeah, increasingly more so indeed. All right, so Attune, insurance as seamless as possible for small businesses, industry-wide. Talk to us about how customers might interact with Attune and what that actually looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. So our product is ultimately a financial product that helps small businesses protect themselves from risk. And there are a few different forms that that takes. We have a flagship product, which is a mixture of property and general liability coverage called BOP. We recently just launched a workers' compensation product that helps cover businesses with respect to any risks that their employees might encounter. And we have a few other products on the shelf that small businesses can buy. Now, a really important differentiator for us versus some of the other insurtechs that are out there, whether it's Lemonades or Next or Hippos or anyone else out in the world, is that our primary customer from the beginning has been the broker of business insurance. We think about brokers a lot of the same way that, let me say it differently. We think that brokers are a critical advisor when it comes to getting and understanding insurance. It's kind of like you wouldn't buy your own house, you would go through a real estate agent. Or you wouldn't necessarily represent yourself in court, you would have a lawyer. So you have these intermediaries that are really critical in very complex industries that help not only ease and make sense of that complexity, but also establish really important relationships with their customers or their clients. In our case, insurance brokers have really critical relationships with their small business insureds. And so what we've done is we've built software that brokers can use. We have a core web app that brokers use to secure business insurance on behalf of their small business clients. Small businesses also interact with us when they pay us, when they renew their policy, so for in a variety of other ways. But ultimately, we are securing relationships with the broker so that we can empower them to service their small businesses. And we've found that one-to-end sort of approach scales better for us as a business, as well as makes this really critical intermediate layer more empowered and more productive. So that's kind of the way we do it. Brokers come to us, they come to our web app, they produce accounts for the different small business clients that they have. They'll quote a small business and they can quote across multiple lines, everything from BOP to workers' comp to cyber to a variety of other things that we offer. And then they can continue servicing that small business over the lifetime of their policy, which is hopefully forever if they continue renewing.
So essentially, one-stop shop for insurances, industry-wide, if you like.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, there are definitely, we don't necessarily, I would say industry-wide with an asterisk. Yeah. We haven't gotten coverage to every type of small business today. There are various types of small businesses that take more work and effort to underwrite and price, but I would say 80-20 for sure.
Nice. Okay. We've had some really interesting insurance companies on the pod before. I love the insurance space. I love the complexity. You and I have spoken about some of these complexities. Walk us through what you deem as some of the product and engineering challenges that you're likely to see under the hood on a day-to-day basis at Attune. What are you guys talking about and solving?
Yeah, totally. So when it comes to insurance, I feel like we really think about two things, speed and access. And what I mean by that is, on the speed side, can we get the coverage, pricing, and actual in-force policy to our small businesses through our brokers as quickly as humanly possible? And on the access side, can we offer as many types of protections, lines of business, as our small businesses need? And so when you kind of think about it with those two pillars, there are a number of different challenges that we face day to day. I would say the first one on the access side is just the actual insurance products. I mentioned BOP and workers' comp, and we have a couple others as well. Building and deploying and offering these insurance products to our distribution is a non-trivial effort. And I mean, I think we talked about this earlier. We might get into more of that complexity later, but there's a lot of things that go into building and launching a new insurance product, largely because of the business complexity, the regulatory burden, and all the other things that make the bar for shipping a new insurance product so high. So that's one, thinking about what insurance products are we going to offer to our distribution. Two is speed, is the actual speed, like I mentioned. And that doesn't just mean making the quote bind experience as fast as possible. And by quote bind experience, I mean going into our web app, putting in the details that you need to, getting the price out. That's not the only part. The other part is servicing. Servicing such a complex financial product is non-trivial, requires a lot of effort, requires a lot of subject matter expertise from our customer service team. So we spend a lot of cycles thinking about how do we make their lives easier, whether that's automating some of the functions that they were historically doing, whether that's supercharging them with more tools and capabilities that our team is building, or a variety of other things. The next thing I think a lot about that we think about day to day is data. How do we make sure that we're using the appropriate third party as well as first party data to underwrite and price? How do we make sure we're using the data that we collect on insureds to know about the state of our portfolio at any given point in time? Do we have the most complete picture possible of our small businesses as well as our brokers? And also using the data to do novel new things. I think we're definitely experimenting a bunch now, similar to a lot of companies, on how everything from AI, new ML models and tools that are coming out can empower us and give us the ability to do new things for our brokers and our insureds. So I would say though, there's a lot of challenges, but I would say they kind of cluster in those categories. There are probably a couple that I'm missing too, but those are big ones.
Data and underwriting, especially in the insurance space, is a really interesting one, especially with new machine learning models, AI, and I guess what you can do or what you can produce with that data quite quickly nowadays is pretty fascinating. But I definitely think the data in the underwriting space, especially in what you're building, is something that I can imagine throws up some challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll give you an example. You know, one of the, and it actually merges data and servicing and underwriting together a bit. So one example of a challenge that we face a lot is we have brokers who come to us, but they don't necessarily know what we can offer insurance for. Like I mentioned earlier, I think we cover a pretty wide swath, but we don't necessarily cover anything. And there's some things that maybe we don't want to cover just yet. It might be a particularly new kind of business or something like that.
Yeah.
The brokers will come to us with these unstructured queries like, hey, do you cover, I'm making this up, a church in Alabama that, you know, does X, Y, and Z thing, or a restaurant in Nebraska that's open past 12 and serves liquor and so forth and so on. And we'll get these pretty gnarly requests that traditionally, you know, someone on our servicing team will have to do quite a bit of research to go and look up whether or not we actually can underwrite and price this specific configuration of a business. But a lot of the documentation that exists for them to know how to do that is in PDFs, it's in, you know, text, and LLMs, along with a few other different tactics that we've been able to employ, give us the opportunity to really make this job so much easier. And so someone comes in, they make this like very unstructured request. We can structure it a bit better, get the signal that we need from our own documentation, ideally do it in a very efficient way, and give folks on our servicing team more, basically a superpower to be able to say, hey, what took me maybe minutes to an hour plus, I have enough context here to be able to answer back with a high degree of integrity and certainty much faster, within minutes or less, sometimes within seconds. So I think that's the kind of challenge that we get really excited about that gets unlocked now because of what's happening in the world, thanks to the open AIs and metas.
Interesting. I think everyone's explored that. I think if I've really interpreted someone's reference correctly, people are using LLMs and they're building what I think they've called their software wrappers or their wrapper around it to speed up what was probably a really manual process inside of your business before to find out that information if you can actually provide this service, and your wrapper actually is able to do that for you. So that allows you just to operate at sheer speed. Now, what was that turning point in the business like when you realized you could actually do that with LLMs and AI to a degree? What was that turning point like inside the business? I know we haven't discussed that, but I think that's a really interesting journey to go on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. I think we're still on that journey, just to be very frank and honest. We probably got a lot more serious about understanding how we could supercharge our team with new tools, new AI tools, sometime last year, like a lot of companies. Yeah. I think one sort of pivotal moment that really drove this home was having a team-wide AI hackathon early last year that I'm sure lots of companies did. But the really interesting thing about that was lots of folks across the business participated. And we discovered some really interesting use cases that we just were kind of wowed by. And I would say the thing that was unique about that experience was the bar for being wowed. There were so many easy to whip up tools and prototypes that were so stunning because of the technology and its ease of applicability in our substrate. You know, we're a document-rich company. We work in insurance and I think any company in financial services is so document rich that it was just, there were so many different places where we could apply these technologies and have really interesting, really enticing prototypes, some of which became products. So I would say sometime around then, early last year was when the bit flipped, I would say. And now we're really trying to figure out just across the board where we can inject more of these tools to not only build tools for our customers, but also build tools for ourselves. I think you hit on something that was really important. It's not just about building really novel customer experiences. It's also treating ourselves as a customer. How do we make ourselves 2x, 3x, 5x, 10x more efficient? And I think there's so many. We've just tip of the iceberg there. I mean, I think there's a lot that we can do, and we continue to really investigate what else we can do there.
You and I explored initially your bias to action and your speed and how you work internally. And that's really what your core product is, right? You want to offer something that's really good, really quickly for your customers. Obviously, accuracy is important. But we did also touch on developer productivity. And this is like a really nice segue into speed, developer productivity. Can you give us an idea of how else you index on those two principles, developer productivity and some bias to action, as to what Attune actually looks like?
Yeah, totally. So like I mentioned, we have an engineering team of a few dozen people at this point, north of 40, I want to say, but I'm trying to remember the exact number, south of 50 somewhere. And there are a few different axes I would say we think about when it comes to productivity. The first thing to say is just org structure. Just a really quick 101 on org structure. We tend to revolve a lot around product engineering teams. And there are many different philosophies around org structure. that lots of teams employ. I think for us, ensuring that teams have ownership over business and product outcomes is really important, along with a functional and sort of enabling layer of infrastructure and IT and data and those sorts of things, which are a little separate and not quite with that product engineering mold. So with that said, I think we've come up with a few different axes, like I mentioned, where we think about not only productivity, but just axes along which we measure ourselves. So the first thing is just delivery. I think we're not unique here. We want to make sure that those commitments that we're making on a quarterly, annual basis are commitments that we're meeting most of the time. We use an OKR methodology similar to a lot of other companies, and we don't necessarily want to hit 100% and knock every commitment out of the park, but we want to meet a reasonable percentage and ensure that our customers as well as our business stakeholders can trust us when we say we're going to ship XYZ. So we have a number of different tools and methodologies to measure delivery. We rely heavily on Linear as sort of like the operating system for measuring roadmap delivery, as well as the operating system for each of our product engineering team or each of our engineering teams. Linear is a great product. But using Linear along with all of the data and tools around it helps us ensure that we're delivering to a high standard. I think the next thing is just people. You know, we are a group of people, both individually as well as within the teams that we're on and the aggregate org that we're in. So we want to make sure that we're keeping a strong pulse on how our people are doing, not just from a productivity standpoint, but from a fulfillment standpoint. We want to make sure that people are working on the right projects that they care about and doing the work that's going to help them be the best they can be. So everything from pulse scores to more specific surveys of our teams to understand how they're feeling about our software development lifecycle, how they're feeling about their career growth, like these sorts of things are really important for us. Operations, we operate the systems that we build. And so that's a really important axis for us. Everything from ensuring that we have the right instrumentation, monitoring, logging, and alerting, to having the right rituals and processes around reviewing errors and reviewing operational incidents or issues that come up is really important for us. I think the only thing I'll say there is there are so many different kinds of companies and kinds of technical challenges. Our challenge isn't so much a scaling challenge, it's more of a reliability challenge. We want to make sure that we're highly reliable because if we get something wrong with the core parts of our product, the cost is so high. Right? This is insurance. And we want to make sure that we're not telling people we're covering risks that we're not covering. So in that sense, reliability is a really key thing. And then finally, you know, we think a lot about quality. We think a lot about the products that we're shipping. And we have a lot of safeguards for ensuring that we're shipping high quality products. That's always a work in progress. But everything from a lot of the, you know, systems you would expect, like constantly working on automated testing, constantly working on having high quality code reviews on our teams, to ensuring that we have the right sort of mechanisms in place to make good software design decisions. Quality is definitely something we think about. The only last thing I'll say, Elliot, is going back to the whole conversation we had around AI, I think we're still trying to figure out where can we inject more AI tooling and more automated tools into our developer workflows such that we can do what we did for the servicing team member, but for our engineers. And we've started experimenting there a little bit. There's so much,
there's a really nice signal in there, which I'm not sure you're deliberately signaling to, but I think it does come down to culture and it does come down to hiring. Your focus on hiring people, and then your culture as to how you solve problems, you're very customer focused, seems as if there's a lot of introspection, really high bar in terms of quality. This is what will make a business deliver a really good product for their customers. Just touching on those four or five things, and it starts with your very first interaction with Attune and coming through the door and that culture as to how you do things across the whole business. And then even your last point on AI, that continual improvement culture, we want to get better, we want to do things faster, you know, that will naturally help people be more productive, that even further bias to action. So I think it feels like it's a continual cycle, and I don't think you deliberately meant to signal to that. And if you did, well, amazing. You probably did, in fairness.
No. Actually, you know, I didn't necessarily, but it's a good point that you bring up, and I hadn't quite thought about it that way. I think we think a lot about curiosity and learning and iterating on what you learn at Attune. We have a value called failure is tuition. And that value really captures the point that we expect people to fail. We expect people to make mistakes. I think a lot of what we want to reinforce for folks is that you're learning from those mistakes. And in every axis that I mentioned, we've made so many mistakes, and we've kind of slowly iterated towards some processes and approaches that are appropriate for us, given the team that we are, the size that we're at, and the context that we're in, which is trying to protect these small businesses through our brokers. So, you know, it works for us. Yeah, don't know good. If it will work for everyone.
No, I think it will. Or definitely works for you guys, or seemingly so. It'd be good to hear a bit of the backdrop story to the tune and the relationship with Coalition, because there's an interesting relationship there. Can you give us a bit of a backdrop to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to go through the story. You know, Attune is kind of a unique origination story in startup, very different from a lot of startups out there, where we didn't necessarily start as two folks in a metaphorical garage. We started as an incubation of sorts. I don't know if it would be technically an incubation or not, but an incubation of sorts. And it was really driven by a large quantitative hedge fund called Two Sigma Investments.
Yeah.
And so Two Sigma, big hedge fund, one of the biggest hedge funds in the world, has had a really successful track record of investing in the public markets using great data science and really top-notch engineering. And so part of the premise here was, well, what other markets can we kind of experiment in? And insurance is a really interesting market for so many reasons. It's a big market. It's filled with really gnarly data, as you kind of alluded to earlier, and messy data. So it's a lot of it's all over the place. It's not super structured. And it's a market that really matters. We have, like I mentioned earlier, we have so many small business owners who are picking their lives back up on account of getting access to great risk protection through insurance. And so Two Sigma partnered with AIG, huge carrier, and Hamilton Insurance, a reinsurer that exists. And Attune was sort of born as a partnership between these different entities. I won't go into all of the details of the, you know, of that business arrangement, but it was born. We brought on our CEO, James Hobson, who had, you know, a great track record servicing small businesses through lending. He ran a company as a COO of a company called On Deck Capital, which went public, which he helped take public. And so he came on board and brought in a lot of that early team, including myself. And I came on board to build out our engineering team as well as our product team. And so Attune was born. We started building over the course of several years, launched our initial product, which is a combination of property and general liability, like I mentioned earlier, our BOP product, added a few other lines in partnership with other carriers, really scaled up. And in 2021, we had some great conversations about fundraising as well as M&A. We had a really good series of conversations with Coalition and ended up selling the company to Coalition towards the end of 2021. For a variety of reasons, as we went through that partnership, I think it was a great partnership from a variety of different vantage points, and we're still partners today. But we realized that we probably needed a slightly different support structure in order to fulfill our mission of delivering property and casualty products, insurance products for small businesses. And Coalition was so focused on cybersecurity, rightfully so. And so towards the beginning of 2023, we realized, okay, well, maybe like M&A isn't the right partnership structure here. Maybe like a business sort of business development partnership makes more sense. We divested Attune, and I'll tell you who bought us in just a second. We maintained the partnership for cyber. We continue to offer cyber insurance coverage to our broker base and our distribution. And it's been a great partnership. I'm still very close with all the folks who maintain that product on the Coalition side, as well as some of the folks at Coalition. I consider it a really, really great partnership so far. And we were acquired at the beginning of 2023 by a company called Pinnacle in the workers' comp space. The premise of that was, okay, we, Pinnacle, can give you the support that you need to be able to offer these brick and mortar P&C insurance products to your distribution. We can unlock some opportunities to be able to build new proprietary insurance products. So like I mentioned, we just launched a new workers' comp product that was in heavy partnership with Pinnacle. It's been just a slam dunk success over the last couple of quarters. We launched it last year. It took us less than 2 quarters to build and deploy this product, which is fast. In insurance, right, this kind of thing maybe takes like 2 to 3 years. But we were able to get it done in effectively less than 2 quarters, which was a huge success for both us and our parent company. And yeah, it's been a great partnership so far. So that's the very long story, probably longer than you wanted, but hopefully it gives you some good detail on kind of where we're at. One other thing I'll say is we've been fortunate to be able to experience what risk protection for small businesses means and looks like through so many different lenses that I think now we've really come to learn so much that's helped us be able to build and scale these insurance products faster than ever and really service our small businesses with a really differentiated amount of context that I don't think most folks get in the seat that we sit in.
What was the plan for Attune this year?
So this year, I think we want to do a couple things. One, scale out our workers' comp product. We started on the journey last year. We've introduced workers' comp in a number of different states. We'd like to get probably to 12.5 states by the end of the year. We're chomping at the bit to go faster, but we live in a regulated world and we have to file in a variety of different states. But I think if we can get to about 12.5 or so states, maybe more, by the end of this year, then that'll be great. We want to maintain and continue to grow the footprint of the products we already have. We have BOP, like I mentioned, on our platform. We've got a number of other smaller but still critical products on our platform, like cyber through Coalition, a couple others as well. So we want to continue to nurture and grow those products. That's really important for us. I put those sort of in maybe two buckets. The third bucket is kind of what I alluded to earlier. We're just beginning this journey of making ourselves more productive, whether it's our making our servicing team 10x more effective, whether it's automating various things that we do today that are more manual processes, help empowering our underwriting team to do the same. And so investing more in that servicing journey, that automation journey is really important to us. So I would say that's another category. Getting to know our brokers better. We're on a journey to grow our broker base, and understanding them better through data is really important to us as well. There are a couple other things too, but those I would say are the big categories. If we can make meaningful progress across those 3 or 4 different categories and concerns by the end of the year, I think we are winning if we're doing
it. Yeah, I love the product space. I love the AI discovery bit. This does lead me to a really nice question, and this is based on our conversation today. What do you think are the top 3 characteristics that an engineer needs in today's current climate to go and thrive? It's ever changing, but I'd really love to hear some of your thoughts about what you think is needed.
Yeah, totally. It's funny that you asked this. Now, we recently just went through an offsite with myself and my direct reports on our PMs as well to revamp some of our cultural tenets when it comes to our tech team and our engineering team as well as our product team. So I think there are definitely some things that we look for that I think are not just specific to us, but are important for any company that's that's really looking to be successful today in 2024. First thing is just like a high sense of ownership. I mentioned this earlier. It's important for our engineers and our engineering team to own the things that they ship end to end. And that doesn't just mean from an engineering perspective. It's important to think about the user-facing product experience too. This goes back to what I mentioned with swerving or spanning responsibly. We're living through a world where efficiency is, where teams are just becoming way more efficient. And so on teams that are becoming way more efficient, having a very end-to-end sense of ownership and being able to think about things outside of just your narrow definition of your job responsibilities when you are hired is just so critical. I feel like we are living in a renaissance world of generalists, and becoming more generalist over time is probably a winning strategy in my opinion. So that's one. Two, having a sense of ownership and becoming a generalist. Yeah. Two is just a high degree of curiosity. We have, you know, always screened for folks who can come to us with curiosity, with thinking about why something is first. And we found that folks who do that well tend to work better on our teams, not taking assumptions for granted, and also always assuming the best of intentions when encountering something, even if you disagree with it. I think that's really important. The third one won't really surprise you, but being able to operate well remotely. You know, we're a distributed team, a remote first team. There are lots of companies that are kind of returning to office. One of the things that I think a lot about when it comes to this is working asynchronously and working remotely is a very almost anti-fragile, at least resilient, but possibly anti-fragile way of working if the next pandemic rolls around, if the next XYZ thing rolls around, or if just, you know, more benign disasters happen, people need to be distributed. So I think we think a lot about how do we make working remotely great. And we look for folks who will work well in that culture, people who over-index on writing, people over-index on strong asynchronous communication. So I would say that's maybe like a third thing that's really important in not only for us, but I think is an important trait for software engineers to have today to be able to function well, because there are enough companies that are remote and you never know when companies will be remote. Even those that aren't, I think still value really good asynchronous working practices.
You can tell the third point, there's an index on productivity. As in remote working, less commute times. But I think strong asynchronous communication is a skill in itself that you need to learn and need to develop. Communication skills written to someone who's potentially in a different state is very different to verbal face-to-face contact. You have to be so deliberate with what you're saying and the message that you're trying to convey. The first two don't really surprise me. You know, curiosity is a huge thing in today's climate with some of the introspective AI discovery that you're going on at the moment about efficiency, productivity. I've learned a little bit about Attune's culture today.
Yeah, of course. No, that's great.
You need point two, right?
Yeah. It's important. I definitely agree with that. I think it's hard to function well without point two. And, you know, it's when things are changing, you kind of nailed it. When things are changing so fast, you almost have to be curious. Otherwise, you'll get left behind. And I think that can be really tough.
100%. I want to wrap up today and just say a massive thanks. We've had 40 minutes of insights into what you guys and girls are building at Attune, the backdrop to Attune, but also the internal culture. That constant improvement culture, I think it really is needed in today's market, but I think you're operating in a really, really interesting space. It'll be exciting to see how the product evolvements come along this year with your workers' comp and everything else. So we'll stay in touch, but a big thank you for joining us, sharing what you guys are doing, what you're building, and some of the challenges that come along with that.
I really appreciate it. Thanks so much, Elliot. This is a lot of fun.
No, absolute pleasure. And for everyone else, likes, shares, subscribes, roll them in. We want to continue growing the community and things like that only help. And for sure, it's bye for now.
Hey guys, thanks for watching this episode. Massively appreciate you listening and checking in with us. If you want to find out more about us and what we're doing, please check us out on social media. What we're trying to do at Engineers is build a community to drive knowledge sharing and experiences. On Twitter, we can be found at engineers.io. It's no underscore. We've also got a website, which is engineers.io. These links will all be posted in the description. Any feedback and comments are massively appreciated. We're always looking to improve on where we can. Thanks, guys.